Chapter 51. Durzo crept along the rafters supporting the roof of Castle Cenaria's great hall, cloaked in shadows. His work had a lot of variety. He'd always liked that. But he'd never wanted to be a maid. Yet somehow he found himself pushing a damp rag over wood, scooping up dust meticulously, scooting forward slowly as he cleared each inch. Strangely enough, hovering 50 feet over the floor of the hall, the rafters hadn't been dusted recently, and Durzo hated being dirty. Still, no matter how careful he was, he couldn't help but dislodge little clumps of dust from time to time, clumps that would puff out like clouds heavy with snow and drift downward, marking his otherwise invisible progress. The nobles below, mercifully, weren't exactly staring at the ceiling. The festivities were in full swing. The events of the night before had brought out everyone. Voices drifted up to the rafters in a dull roar as men and women celebrated midsummers and gossiped about what the king could possibly be doing. Obviously, the biggest morsel was what Logan was doing at the high table. Everyone knew he'd been arrested, and they couldn't keep their eyes off him. Why was he here? For his part, Logan was sitting like a man doomed, which was exactly what Durzo suspected he was. Knowing Aline, the king had summoned Logan so he could publicly humiliate him in front of all the peers of the realm. Maybe he'd announce Logan's death sentence. Maybe he'd have it carried out at the table. Durzo moved again and dislodged a large clump of decades-old dust. He watched, helpless, as it spiraled down toward one of the side tables. Part of the clump broke apart in the air, but part of it hit the arm of a gesticulating noblewoman. She brushed her arm and continued her story without a pause. Brushing more dust and still moving slowly, Durzo gritted his teeth. He was slipping. Of course, he always told himself he was slipping. It kept him sharp. Maybe this time, though, he really was. Too much was happening. It was all too personal. Durzo reached a joint where several beams came together to support the roof. There was no way to stay on top of the rafter and get past. He would have to go around or under. Whoever had designed these rafters hadn't had convenient skulking in mind. Setting climbing hooks around each of his wrists, Durzo wedged his fingers where two beams came together at an angle. It was painful, but a wet boy learned to ignore pain. He swung out over space, letting his feet release the beam. He wondered what the fat noblewoman below him would think if her dinner were suddenly crushed by a falling shadow. He held his entire weight by his fingertips and used his weight to wedge his fingers deeper into the painful crack, then released his right hand and swung to grab the other side of the joint, past the solid surface where all the beams came together. He had only his long reach to thank for making it. He got 3 fingertips into the crack on the far side of the beam. As he shifted his weight, the dust in the crack was just enough to slide his fingertips off. Blint rolled his wrist forward as his fingers slipped. He dropped 3 inches, and then the wrist hook caught in the crack his fingers had just left. The hook held. Blint released his left hand, and his body swung again. Now he'd fall directly on the woman instead of on her food. He pulled against the iron hook, biting into his wrist, and was able to reach high enough to grab with his fingers. He swung again, pulled out the hook, and grabbed the edge of the beam with his other hand. He hung there, fingertips holding his entire weight from the same side of the beam, and the grip slick with an inch of dust. Had he thought he liked his work? But with practiced grace, He swung sideways and caught the edge with a foot. Deftly, he wriggled back up onto the beam, ignoring the dust he pushed off the beam as he did so. Some risks you can't help, and some you can. I haven't exactly minimized my risks, have I? Durzo tried not to think about it, but scooting along the beam, acting like a cleaning lady, didn't take his full attention. He'd given Kylar all the hints he needed to interrupt what Roth had planned here, and he'd given him motive to make sure he came here rather than leaving town. It's bad luck, old boy. But what was bad luck to him now? He was going to lose no matter what. At the head table, the king stood. His face was flushed, and he wobbled. He raised his glass. My friends, my subjects, today is Midsummer's Eve. We have much to celebrate and much to mourn. Words have abandoned me in light of what's happened in the last day. Our kingdom has endured the grievous loss of Katrina Gyre and her entire household at the hands of her murderous husband, and the loss of our beloved prince. The king choked out the words, and his emotion was so obvious that not a few eyes brimmed with equal tears. The prince had been young and dashing, if unwise, and the Gyres had been respected for decades personally and for generations familially. Today, we gather to celebrate Midsummer's. Some might wonder why we celebrate in the shadow of such dark deeds. I'll tell you why. We wish to celebrate the lives of our loved ones, not yet mourn their deaths. On the king's left hand, Lord General Aegon was nodding his head with grim approval. Durzo wondered how much of this speech was Aegon's. Most of it, he suspected. The king drank from his glass, forgetting that he was in the middle of a toast. The nobles throughout the room looked confused. Should they drink? Or was the king not finished? Half chose each, but the king continued, gaining volume. I'll tell you why we're here. We're here because the bastards who murdered my boy aren't going to stop me. They aren't going to get me. They aren't going to stop me from doing whatever the hell I please. Lord General Aegon looked alarmed. Aelin the Ninth had slipped into the first person singular from the royal plural. He must have had more to drink than was apparent. And I'll tell you what is our sovereign pleasure. There are schemers, plotters, traitors here tonight, yes. And I swear to you, traitors, you will die. The king had gone purple with rage. I know you're here. I know what you're doing. But it's fucking not going to fucking work.
Well, look who learned a new word.
Now, sit down, Brant,
the king shouted as the Lord General stood. The nobles were stricken silent.
Some of you have betrayed us to Kalador. You've murdered our prince. You've killed my boy. Logan Gyre, stand.
Cira Drake was sitting near the back, according to her rank. But even from above, Durzo could see the terror on her face. She thought the king was going to have Logan executed publicly. And she wasn't alone. Logan Gyre stood, shaken. He was handsome, and from what Durzo knew, formidable, and popular with both the assembled nobles and the small folk of the city.
Logan! The king shouted. You've been charged with my son's death! And yet here you are tonight, celebrating. Did you kill my boy?
Several nobles cried out in alarm, shouting that Logan would never be involved in such a thing. The king's soldiers looked scared. They looked to Captain Arturian for guidance. He nodded, and two guards stepped up beside Logan.
Well,
Durzo thought, finally coming directly over the head table where the king and Logan were seated.
If threats don't make Kylar want to kill me, this will. The innocent always lose.
Let him speak!
The king roared. He let off a stream of curses, and the crowd quieted. The tension hung thick over them. Logan spoke loudly and clearly.
Your Majesty, your son was my friend. I deny all charges.
The king was silent for a long moment. Then he said,
I believe you, Duke Jaya.
He turned to the nobles.
Lord Jaya has been found blameless in our sight. Logan Jaya, will you serve your country at all costs?
Durzo paused, as stunned as the nobles were.
I will.
Logan spoke clearly, but there was obvious tension in his face. His eyes had locked on Cira Drake's. What the hell is going on? This had the feel of something scripted.
Then, Lord Jaya, we pronounce you Crown Prince of Cenaria, and we announce your marriage of this afternoon to our own daughter, Janine. Logan Jaya, you shall be our heir until such time as an heir is born to our royal house. Do you accept this duty and this honor?
I do.
The apprehension in the great hall had turned to disbelief. Then awe. Janine Gunder moved to stand beside Logan, looking as awkward as a 15-year-old can. Durzo heard a little cry from Cira Drake. Her hands flew up to her mouth. Then she fled. But nobody besides Logan and Durzo noticed, because even as she ran for the exit, a cheer broke out, rapidly spreading to every throat. The king tossed off his wine, and the nobles joined his toast, saluting Logan.
Prince Jaya! Prince Jaya! Logan Jaya!
The king sat, but the cheering continued. All eyes were on Logan and Janine. The king looked irritated that the nobles were chanting Prince Jaya instead of the traditional Prince Logan. Might have been simply because it was easier to chant, but it also drove home that Logan wasn't a Gunder, and everyone was happy about it. Logan graciously, if somewhat woodenly, accepted the applause, nodding to his friends. Then he blushed as his new wife took his hand. Her face glowed with embarrassment at her own boldness and adoration for her husband. The nobles loved it. But as the approval roared to a crescendo, the king looked more and more vexed. And still the cheering continued. The servants were cheering. The guards were cheering. It was as if the nobles felt a black cloud lifting from their futures. Not a few were saying, "What a king Logan Jaya will make!" Hurrahs rang of it. Aline Gunder was turning purple again, but no one was paying him the slightest attention.
Prince Jaya! Prince Jaya! Long live Prince Jaya! Hurrah!
The king jumped to his feet, apoplectic.
Now go! Go consummate this marriage!
He shouted at Logan, who wasn't 5 paces away. Lord General Aegon stood, but the king shoved him away, roughly. Logan looked at Aline, shocked. The nobles quieted.
Are you deaf?
The king shouted.
Go fuck my daughter!
The princess turned white. So did Logan. Then he flushed red, mortified. She looked like she wanted to sink through the floor. At the same time, barely controlled rage washed over Logan's face in a crimson wave. The honor guards on either side of him looked stunned. Durzo wondered if the king had gone mad. The nobles didn't make a sound. No one even breathed.
Out! Get out! Go fuck! Go fuck!
The king yelled. Trembling, livid, Logan looked away and led his wife from the hall. The nervous guards followed.
And the rest of you, the king said. Tomorrow we mourn my son, and I swear that I'll find out who killed my boy if I have to string up the lot of you.
The king sat abruptly and started weeping like a child. Durzo had frozen in place for the entire exchange. The nobles looked baffled, horrified. They slowly sat, staring at the king in silence. Durzo's mind was racing. Roth hadn't foreseen this. Couldn't have. But Durzo was sure that Roth was in the castle, maybe in this very hall. A guard with one of the minor nobles was their signal man. If he took off his helmet, the coup was off.
It gave him a moment to digest what had just happened. Not the king's madness, but Logan's marriage. It was a brilliant bit of intrigue. Now, if the king were killed, instead of four houses having equal claims while Logan Gyre rotted in the maw, Logan Gyre would clearly be the king. With his reputation and the endorsement of the Gunders, he would get quicker obedience from the noble houses than even King Gunder had. It was a brilliant move, but it was too late. Roth had men throughout the castle. He probably couldn't afford to try again later. If the coup had been planned for tomorrow, Logan's marriage might have changed everything. As it was, Logan and Janine would just be added to the list of those who had to die. As Durzo waited, it appeared that Roth agreed. A servant approached the signal guard and spoke with him. The man nodded and kept his hands off his helmet. The coup was on. Whatever Roth would have to fix, it would involve killing Prince Logan Gyre now, who would be conveniently tucked away in the North Tower, where he'd be easy to find. Roth would probably want to assign that job to Durzo, but Durzo had no intention of giving the Caladoran a chance. He would do what he had promised, but he wouldn't kill Kylar's friend. During the first course, the nobles had already eaten the rabbits Durzo had prepared. He'd been feeding those rabbits hemlock for a year. The amount in a portion was a small enough dose that nothing would happen to the diners unless they'd also eaten the starling appetizers. In less than a half hour, the nobles would feel ill. Hemlock poisoning started peacefully enough. Already, the nobles' legs should be losing feeling. If anything, they might notice that their legs felt heavy. Soon, the feeling would spread up. Then they'd start vomiting. Anyone unlucky enough to have eaten seconds would begin convulsing. The timing now was tricky. Poisoning wasn't an exact science, and someone might notice something amiss at any time. Durzo needed to act before that happened. He secured one end of his rope to the beam. It was black silk, ridiculously expensive, but the slenderest and least visible rope Durzo owned. Fixing the harness he'd designed specifically for this mission, Durzo wrapped the rope through it and slid off the beam. Steadying his swaying against the beam, Durzo looked down at his target. The king was directly below him. Durzo tucked in his knees and folded over. The harness bit into his shoulders, and he let out slack, slipping down toward the floor, head first. Now, timing was everything. In one hand, Durzo held the rope. By adjusting its position and tension against the harness, he could dive quickly toward the floor, or stop easily. When he moved, he would need to move quickly. He was shrouded in shadows so that he was barely visible, but he couldn't shroud the rope. In a room this cavernous, a rope swaying above the king as if holding weight would be noticed. The king's guards were good. Vin Arturian made sure of that.
With his other hand, Durzo pulled out two tiny pellets. Both were compounds from various mushrooms. Durzo had been able to make the pellets tiny, but they didn't dissolve quickly, and for this job, he couldn't use a powder. The nobles were still silent. The king was barely crying now, but he noticed the nobles looking at him.
"What are you staring at?"
he shouted. He cursed them roundly.
"This is my daughter's wedding feast! Drink, damn you! Talk!"
The king drained his wine again. The nobles pretended to be talking, and soon that pretense became a furor of speculation. Durzo imagined that they were wondering if the king had lost his mind. He wondered the same himself. He wondered what they'd think after the king drank his next goblet of wine. A servant came and filled the king's goblet. The king's cupbearer sipped the wine first and swished it around his mouth. Then he gave it to the king, who set it down on the table with a thump.
"Your Majesty,"
Lord General Aegon said at the king's left hand,
"may I have a word with you?"
The king turned, and Durzo pushed the rope forward. He dropped like a bolt. 10 feet above the table, he pulled the rope back and jerked to a stop. 10 feet was still a long way to drop something so light, but he'd been practicing. But as he tightened the rope, it twisted, and suddenly he was spinning, not fast, but spinning. It didn't matter. There was no time to try again. The first pellet splashed solidly in the center of the king's goblet. The second hit the edge and tinged off. The pellet rolled several inches across the table by the king's plate. Durzo coolly drew another pellet and dropped it in. The king picked up the goblet and was about to drink when Lord General Aegon said,
"Your Majesty, perhaps you've had enough to drink."
He reached a hand to take the goblet from the king. Durzo didn't waste time seeing what the king would do. He drew a short tube from his back and looked beyond Aegon to the king's mage, Fergund Safasti. He saw the man, but the rope spun him away before he could shoot the blow dart. He was trying for a leg shot. His hope was that the hemlock would have deadened the mage's legs enough that he wouldn't even notice the ting. But on the next rotation, he didn't have a clear shot because the king and the Lord General were gesticulating wildly.
"Damn robes!"
The mage's robes left barely 6 inches of his calf visible. Durzo came around again and abandoned the calf shot. The mage had shifted his feet, and Durzo only had one of the darts, whatever they were baited with. It was a Caladoran secret that was supposed to disable the mage's magical abilities. Durzo puffed on the blowgun. The dart stuck into the mage's thigh. He saw a brief flash of irritation on the man's face. The mage reached down toward his thigh and was jostled by the Sakage servant.
"Sorry, sir, more wine?"
the man asked the mage, snatching the dart.
He was good. With hands like that, he must be one of the best cut purses in the city.
But of course, Roth would only use the best.
"Mine's full, you idiot," the mage said. "You're supposed to serve the wine, not drink it."
Durzo flipped over and scrambled up the rope. Not an easy feat with silk. He rested when he got onto the beam. He had no idea if the king had drunk the wine or not, but his part was done. The only thing to do now was wait.